Yeah, my spiritual hero, me. When I first heard this, I thought, oh no, goodness, I don't really have any spiritual heroes at all. What on earth am I going to say? But then I prayed a bit and I thought a bit, and then I thought, well, in one respect, actually, all you guys at TCF are in some way a spiritual hero to me. Either by something you've said, you know, or something you've done, and each of you, whether you're physically in the room, you know, here today, or whether it's people that have gone before, like John Espin and Ros Wilson, or, you know, people that aren't here today, but in community group, you know, David and Lisa and Lee, and, you know, other people as well. Each of you, in your own way and in your own time, you've been a real example and an encouragement to me. So thanks for that. I need encouragement. So looking back, you might be aware that I'm quite a mad, keen walker, as is Joe, I think. So I think you might see as I talk, there's a bit of a theme about, you know, the physical journey of moving physically through life across the landscape, but also maybe the spiritual journey of our walk with Jesus and getting closer to him day by day. So looking back, you might be aware that I was a member of St. John's Church in Grays for many, many years. And looking back, there were quite a few people there that just by their example really, you know, really taught me things. And it wasn't only what they said, but it was the way that they lived their lives. Some of you may remember these people, like Edward and Margaret Tufnell and Ken and Marjorie Basker, who were in leadership roles, just very loving people, but also very wise people, wise in the things of God, wise in the things of the kingdom. And John and Muriel James, they weren't loud people, they weren't demonstrative, but there was just something about them, the presence of God in their lives and the way that they lived. So that was an example to me. And previous to being a member of St. John's Church, I was, as a teenager and a bit later, I used to go to St. Sed's Church in Cromerville Street in Stifford Clays. And every Friday night, we went to a fellowship group, which was led by a lady called Eva Ham. So every Friday, we went to her house in Chafford Way. And some people remember Eva. Thinking back, I knew very little about her. I think she may have... And I think that in later life she worked in the like youth advisory service or something in Grays, and she may have married a German prisoner of war, but maybe I'm wrong on that. Is that right? Okay, yeah. But Eva just loved God and she loved people, and you know, she wasn't educated in the formal sense of the word, I guess, but she was just a lovely, lovely person. So every Friday night we just went round to her house, and I remember very little about it, but there were just a whole group of us, from like teenagers right up to people that were retired, all experiences, all walks of life. And I vaguely remember, you know, there being a guitar at different times, and somebody might bring a keyboard, and we must have done some Bible teaching, but I don't really remember that so much. It was more just the atmosphere and the presence of God and the friendship and the laughter and the support and, you know, the encouragement that was given in that place. And, you know, how could rebellious teenagers, you know, get on in a friendly manner with people that were 60, 70 plus? How could that happen other than by the Spirit of God and the presence of God? So they were all sort of things that fed into me when I was quite a lot younger than I am now. Then subsequently to that, I went to Manchester to study, and in my first week I think I went to Manchester for two reasons. One was because I liked football, so I thought Manchester United, Manchester City, and sorry Joe, and the other reason was I was a great fan of Coronation Street at the time, so that was the day of the days of Hilda Ogden and Stan and you know, Ina Sharples, going back a bit. But I digress. So I went to Manchester, not really knowing why. In the first week, I met this guy who was in my halls of residence, a guy called Mike Emmermuden. Now, Mike was Hong Kong Chinese. His father had fled from the communists when he was quite young in 1949, when the communists took over, went to Hong Kong. So Mike was born in Hong Kong, and although he was obviously quite Chinese to look at, he had some German blood. He had relatives in Germany, and he was actually a distant relative of the Red Baron, Baron Richthofen, who you might remember was the World War I fighter ace. So a very, very interesting guy. So anyway, he introduced himself, said he was a Christian, and I thought, oh yes, I know, I'm a Christian as well. I know what they are. But it struck me quite soon that Mike not only believed in Jesus as a historical figure, and he believed in the Bible as a source of good advice, but he also believed that God was alive and real and was speaking today and was active today. So I thought, wow, interesting. So anyway, I got friendly with Mike. We joined the Christian Union in the hall, and he took me to a few wider meetings in Manchester, where the word of God was preached, and there were signs and wonders, miracles, healing, baptism in the Spirit, and all that sort of wonderful stuff, which was all new to me. So a couple of years later, I actually got to go. Mike and I got to be really good friends, and a couple of years later, I actually went back with him to spend the summer in Hong Kong. This is 1986, so it's going back a bit. And I think it was Judith that mentioned Jackie Pullinger in her talk. Maybe one or two other people mentioned it. So for at least two Sundays, maybe three Sundays, we went to Jackie's church in Hang Phuc refugee camp in Hong Kong. And I just remember those Sunday afternoons as a time of great worship, great fellowship, and maybe it's a metaphor, but the church didn't have any walls. It had a roof, but there were no walls. And I remember one particular Sunday, not only was the worship absolutely out of this world, but there was a terrific thunderstorm, and the rain was coming down and bouncing off the roof and everything. I think although the service was predominantly in English, there was also worship in Chinese, I think, Cantonese, and it was just wonderful to join together with these believers from a different culture to me, different experience, all worshiping God together. And I did want to go to into the walled city in Kowloon, where Jackie did all the work with the drug addicts, but I was told not to go, and to be honest, I was quite scared about going because of its reputation, so I never went to the walled city. But it was literally just a mile or two down the road, and even when you passed by on foot or on the bus or something, it just looked like the place that you didn't want to go. So the fact that she and the other believers could actually go in and minister in that place was absolutely, absolutely, absolutely remarkable. And then in later life, when Mike actually emigrated to Australia and I came back to the UK, obviously, but for many, many years we were in touch by letter, and he was a constant encourager through writing letters. It sounds a bit medieval now, doesn't it, writing letters, but it was, at the time, it was just a great, great encouragement. Yeah, so moving on, some other spiritual heroes of mine. These two are going back a bit, but I think you'll see the metaphor of movement, the metaphor of following God, the metaphor of pilgrimage. First one is Saint Columba, and I am going back a bit. Saint Columba was born in Ireland in the 500s, so 1,500 years ago plus. You might recall he founded the Abbey on Iona, which is in the Hebrides of Scotland. He travelled over from Ireland in a small boat across the stormy Irish Sea, and was heavily involved in evangelizing the Picts, who were the inhabitants of Scotland at the time. It wasn't only him, but he was a major figure in that. His name in Irish means dove, as apparently so does the name for Jonah, and they were both Jonah and Columba were involved in traveling across the sea for the sake of the gospel. So that's interesting. And as Columba traveled across Scotland, he actually journeyed on one occasion to Loch Ness and to Inverness to witness to the king that had his castle in Inverness. And there's a story about the him banishing the Loch Ness monster to the depths of Loch Ness. Now, okay, that may not have actually happened. I believe it may not have happened, but maybe it's a metaphor for the power of the gospel, you know, defeating evil forces. But, you know, I was at Loch Ness 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there was definitely no monster on the surface, at least. So, you know, there can't be many occasions at a Thorough Christian Fellowship that you get the Red Baron and the Loch Ness monster on the same Sunday. So that's just to prove that the dinosaur that was mentioned last week can be mentioned this week as well. Okay, so that's St. Columba. Second guy from the medieval time I wanted to mention is St. Aidan. St. Aidan was also Irish. He also came to the UK or England. And he was a bit after Columba, about 50 or 100 years after Columba, so in the year 600s. When he first came over to England, he couldn't speak any English at all, but he was instrumental in converting the Anglo-Saxons in Northumbria. And in those days, Northumbria basically went from where Hull is to where Edinburgh is now, so it's a big piece of land. And something that was significant about Aidan was that although he came from quite a high position in Ireland, he was interested in all classes of people. Is that okay? I'll keep going. He was instrumental in founding the monastery in Lindisfarne and requested, King Oswald requested missionaries from Iona to help the work in Northumbria. It is said of Aidan that he spoke patiently to everybody at their own level, and he paid to educate slaves, free slaves and to educate orphans. And the Venerable Bede wrote extensively about him. And the thing to remember about Bede, as I almost a Freudian slip there, the fact is that Bede was venerable, not venomous, okay? Bede was like a great historian of the English church and also the English nation in the 700s. This is what Bede wrote about Aidan. During the time that he was bishop, the hostile army of the Mercians under the command of Penda cruelly ravaged the country of the Northumbrians far and near, even to the royal city, which has its name from Beba, formerly its queen. That today now is the town of Bamborough on the coast of Northumberland. It's a beautiful place if you haven't been. There's a big castle there now. Not being able to take it by storm or by siege, he endeavoured to burn it down, and having pulled down all the villages in the neighbourhood of the city, he brought thither an immense quantity of beams, rafters, partitions, wattles and thatch, wherewith he encompassed the place to a great height on the land side. And when he found the wind favourable, he set fire to it and attempted to burn the town. At that time, the most reverend Bishop Aidan was dwelling in the Isle of Farne, which is about 2 miles from the city. It's now a bird reserve. For thither he was wont often to retire and pray in solitude and silence. And indeed, this lonely dwelling of his is to this day shown in that island. When he saw the flames of fire and the smoke carried by the wind rising above the city walls, he is said to have lifted up his eyes and hands to heaven, and cried with tears, "Behold, Lord, how great evil is wrought by Penda." These words were hardly uttered when the wind, immediately veering from the city, drove back the flames upon those who had kindled them, so that some being hurt and all afraid, they forbore any further attempts against the city, which they perceived to be protected by the hand of God. Thanks to Wikipedia. Thanks to God. Yeah, so I just wanted to flag up one final spiritual hero of mine. I think others have mentioned him as well, and that's Abraham. Abraham was born in Ur of the Chaldeans in modern-day Iraq, and was taken by his father, Terah, to Haran. And the story of Abraham is a great story, number one, of pilgrimage, but more importantly, of faithfulness to what God had told him. So Abraham received an instruction from God to leave his country and his people to go to the land that God would guide him to. And I don't know whether Abraham had any struggle with that internally or whether he debated it with God, but no, only three verses after that instruction from the Lord, it simply says that Abraham, as he was then, departed as the Lord had instructed him. So he was immediately obedient to what God had asked him within God's timing. Shortly after that, there was an obstacle that he met a famine, and was led into Egypt. So the fact that there was a famine didn't dissuade him, didn't turn him away from God's plan for him, but he continued to be led by God despite the difficulty, despite the obstacle. Shortly thereafter, there was an issue, there was a problem between the herdsman of Lot, his nephew, and the herdsman of Abraham over which land each would take. And Abraham gave Lot first choice about which land Lot would go for. This was in spite of Abraham being the older figure, and by right Abraham should have had authority to choose first, but he was gracious enough to give way to Lot. So he really took the initiative in resolving the conflict. So after Lot had separated from Abraham and gone his own way, Abraham was given a further instruction: rise up, walk the breadth and length of the land, for I will give it to you. And as it later transpired, Lot chose land near the land of Sodom, which actually led to Lot being captured and being led into captivity. Abraham faced the issue head on and responded decisively to rescue Lot. He was obedient to God in that, and his prior training, prior closeness to God, enabled Abraham to resolve the issue. And the king of Sodom actually offered Abraham loot, which had been captured, in thanks for the fact that the king of Sodom's people had been returned to him. But Abraham turned down this offer of loot from the king of Sodom because he only wanted what the Lord had for him. He didn't want gifts from other people. So God had also given a promise to Abraham that his descendants would be like the stars in the sky. In fact, too many to count. I mean, that must have seemed an almost impossible promise for Abraham to trust in, because at that point Abraham had no heir. He had no children. His wife was as old as Abraham was. So in the physical, how could this come about? It was surely impossible to any reasonable person. But it says that Abraham believed God, and God considered him righteous on account of his faith. Now, Abraham wasn't perfect. He did waver, and at one point he thought, well, you know, this is a really difficult issue, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a second wife who's younger, and she is obviously going to be the one that's going to give the child of the promise, because, you know, the older lady is unable to, so the younger one will provide the child. So, you know, I think we can look back at our own lives and the circumstances and times when we've maybe made the wrong choice, maybe we've attempted to do things according to our own reasoning and according to our own solutions. That, in his mercy, that doesn't stop God from working, but it's important to us that we recognise that and we get back on track with God's purposes and God's intentions and doing it in his way. I've needed to do that myself more than once. Yeah, so Abraham's role was simply to keep the covenant that God had established, to believe what God had told him, and to live out his life in obedience. So as time went on, Abraham was visited by three strangers who turned out to be angels. Abraham was obedient in that he offered hospitality to the three visitors in accordance with the custom at that time. And there's a mention in Hebrews to us that hospitality is important to us to offer, because you never know, by offering hospitality, you might even be hosting angels unbeknown. And we know that angels are active, present and working. One further example, good example of the life of Abraham, is that he was a man of prayer. He was a man who had dialogue with God. This is shown when he was praying to God about whether God would destroy everyone in the city of Sodom or not. Abraham asked him to spare the city. Would he spare the city if there were only 10 righteous people? So it was important to Abraham to have a prayer life, to have a dialogue with God, and Abraham allowed his own thinking to be refined through his prayer life with God. He was able to present his requests to God honestly, but he also listened to what God had to say and allowed his thinking to be refined by that. And the Lord showed Abraham that asking for anything is allowed, but God's answers are from God's perspective, and they are not always in harmony with our expectations or with our understanding. And to his credit, Abraham was able to accept this. And so let's be people that pray, but let's also be people that listen to God's perspective. Yeah, so Abraham's pleading with God resulted in God saving Lot and his family when Sodom was destroyed. So it was an example, Abraham's obedience in that was an example of Abraham, a godly person, affecting others for good. So through a life of faith, trust and obedience, God did fulfill his promise, as he always would, and Abraham became a father at the age of 100, which is quite an amazing thing. So as with Abraham, perhaps with us, we will, I think, face the test of obedience in our own lives, and the test of that obedience is to deepen our commitment to God, number one, and to strengthen our character. Often we want our character strengthened the easy way, without us having to learn anything or experience anything. But it seems that God's way is often to lead us maybe through a bit of a dark path or a difficult path to strengthen our character. But even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we know that God is with us, and his purposes will prevail. And we know that in obedience there's blessing. Yeah, so just to sum up, through all those people in history that I haven't met, and the brothers and sisters that I have met, they've all been an encouragement to me, and you continue to be an encouragement to me also, each one of you. So God bless you, and that's me done. Amen. Thank you.